So I paid like 255 for it the
Okay.
year my daughter was born, so 2014. The market has gone up about 25% each year since between then and now, so over 4 years. And now I'm getting about $2,700 in rent for it.
Are you a real estate investor looking to sharpen your skills, or a newbie looking to become one? You're in the right place. Welcome to Where Should I Invest? Real Estate Investing in Canada with your host, Sarah Larby.
Hey guys, it's Sarah Larby here on Where Should I Invest? Real Estate Investing in Canada. We have an awesome guest today, Erwin Zito, who you may also know as Mr. Hamilton. Erwin is the host of Halton REI. He also owns 10 properties himself, and we are going to hear all about how he got started and how he acquired 10 properties in a short few amount of years. Also, we're going to talk about the pros and cons of RESPs and why Erwin decided to buy a house for each of his kids instead, so that when they're ready for university, they've actually, in my opinion, they're going to be much further ahead. I did want to take a moment, actually. I had a few of you guys email me, and I want to thank you because those emails and the LinkedIn messages about what you'd like to hear are awesome, and I really, really do appreciate you guys reaching out to me. I've also actually rebranded, and I have a website now, which is www.saralarby.com. There's lots of great information on there. Please feel free to take a look. Let me know what you think. I've also written an ebook that's free as well if you guys want to take that. It's an ebook about the top 10 questions I get asked from newbies about real estate investing. And there is another ebook as well that is actually the top 10 ways to find and keep amazing tenants. So those ebooks are available if you guys want them. I did want to take a moment just because there's actually a few people that have asked me how I calculate cash flow. And for those of you guys that have an iPhone, there are two apps that I use all the time. I'm not specifically that great in math, and I don't have my computer with me every single minute of the day where I can pull out a spreadsheet and start calculating things. So there are two apps that I use when I wanted to run some quick numbers on cash flow. The first one is called Mortgage. Literally, that's just what it is. It's a little greenhouse with a Canadian red flag. And the other app that I use on iPhone is called Evaluator. And they're free, by the way. If you guys want to have a way to calculate some quick cash flow, download those two apps. They're awesome. The one that I use probably the most is the mortgage one. And what I would do in there, so I would plug in all the information, the home price, the rental income that I think I'm going to get that you guys can find from Kijiji, the taxes, the down payment being 20%. The rate that I would get, and then the amortization schedule. So it's actually pretty easy. It's all just on one page. Then for the monthly utility and fees, what I do is I would actually use 4% for maintenance, 4% for capital expenditure. I would ask an insurance person around you for an insurance quote. Because I know my area, I estimate about $95 per month. If you guys are going to be renting out a water heater rental, I personally buy mine out. But if you guys do that, it's $30. You can actually have the tenant pay it. However, if it's with Reliance, usually they don't want to go directly to the tenant. So that's how I calculate my cash flow for the properties that I'm purchasing. But if you've got a newer house or an older house, or you've got a condo with condo fees, these prices and these estimations can change. So just keep in mind. And if you guys ever need some help calculating some cash flow on a property, feel free to reach out to me and I can give you some insights. But it is one of those apps that, again, it's not a be all and end all, but it'll allow you guys to just do some quick math to see if something is even worth looking further into and then opening up your computer and putting it through a spreadsheet. So that answers the question about what apps I use for calculating cash flow. If you guys have any questions or specific things that you would like me to review at the beginning of any podcast, please send me an email. My email is sarah@saralarby.com. or you can send me a message on my Instagram at SarahLarby84, or you can actually contact me through the website as well. So with that said, let's get on with our interview with Erwin Zito. Thanks very much, Erwin, for being on the podcast today.
Happy to be here.
The first question I have for you is, why real estate investing? Why did you choose that versus investing in the stock market or Bitcoin or something like that?
So Bitcoin, I haven't done. I still have some. I have one stock left. I graduated from business school and we actually learned quite a bit about financial markets. What we learned probably wasn't really that much because there isn't that much to the financial markets. No, there's plenty to it. There's not much that an individual can do to make them an advantaged stock investor. So I had stock all through school and out of school. I got decimated during the credit crisis of 07-08. I even had a stock go to zero that was delisted. Through that process, I realized what thin ice I was on. One of the C-level officers left and the stock just crashed like 20%. And I was like, I have so little control over this. I lost a lot of money. Then I sold off all my stock because it wasn't working. And I had been investing for years. And I'm not a dummy either. Like I went to a pretty good business school. I was sitting for my CFA. I know how to read financial statements, but I had no control. And real estate, and I've always been trying different things. I day traded for a while, did stocks and bonds. I can't think off the top of my head the other investments I've done. Real estate was just one of the other ones that we tried because I was willing to try anything to get ahead. And real estate worked like through the credit crisis. And that's something that's important to, especially novice investors, like people who've actually, it's important to listen to people who've invested through other cycles, like a full cycle, and including downturns. Like I held property through the downturn and it was fantastic because my property values pretty much held steady and that didn't matter anyways. The value didn't matter. I wasn't selling. When we had vacancy, they filled immediately because this was the credit crisis. No one had credit. People still needed a place to live. Our rents were actually going up. And that's why, so we've been really successful in real estate. It's the only thing that's consistently worked. And that's why real estate. And the returns have been fantastic.
Some great points for sure. Definitely a lot more control. So you mentioned that you had some properties before the downturn. When did you get started?
I'll actually give credit to my ex-wife. She got me started by buying a property about a year after university. A little wartime two-bedroom bungalow in downtown Burlington. You know, I was the cocky business school graduate out of school, straight out of school. And I was like, oh, you should just buy a BMW. Why are you buying real estate? It's an ugly house as is. And yeah, that's how we got started. She had good mentorship from her dad, who put the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad in her hands. And she took action on it. And then I saw the success there, and that's how I got started. And that was like our first property. We eventually moved into it later after we got married, and we did a whole bunch of renovations to it. And yeah, that little property that we bought for $154,000, that allowed us to be mortgage-free by the age of 30.
That's amazing. So did you buy a second one fairly soon after?
Yeah, with help, we bought another property up the street. And then I can't even remember what my third property was. We didn't really know what we were doing, though. We were breaking even. Burlington, for those who know Burlington rents aren't very good, even though the fundamentals seem quite strong for the city. We were just breaking even after hard costs. Mm-hmm. So after mortgage, tax, insurance, we were breaking even. So anything extra was coming out of pocket.
Right. So your maintenance, any capital expenditures, any of that stuff?
All out of pocket. The cash flow didn't cover that.
There's still 6% mortgage pay down every year by the tenants, and I'm sure overall your appreciation definitely helped. But however, I'm sure you eventually at some point you figured out the cash flow was the way to go.
Well, this is downtown Burlington, so anyone who knows downtown Burlington, this is one of the most sought after neighborhoods in all of Hamilton and Burlington. So those prices were, you know, they've gone up, you know, 25% on average for the last 5-6 years. So it's done all right.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you're a realtor in Hamilton, but also, you know, around the Golden Horseshoe area.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That was an after thing, though. I was an investor for about at least 4 years before I got my license. And the only reason I got my license was because we couldn't work with the real estate broker that we were working with. I was a RAIN member. He didn't understand economics and business on the level that I did. And there was really no one else out there. So I was just getting my license to be able to trade my own account. But at RAIN, I had some friends that found out about it, that me having my license, and they knew how well I was doing. So they asked, I want some of the same, and I want you to help me with it. And that's, I had my license, and then I became like an agent, like actually working for other people.
That's a great way to fall into it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was doing so well in real estate as an investor and also as a realtor that it was actually costing me money to be at my job, right? I was making more outside the office than I was in the office. So then it makes sense to leave the office. Right. So I resigned. I resigned shortly after.
Were they shocked?
I don't know. It's funny because I didn't think of myself as a good employee. I kind of figured myself, I didn't know at the beginning, but late in my career at my employer, I didn't fit with me because I wasn't going as progressing as fast as I wanted. So I was doing the minimum, but when I was there, I was giving it my all.
Right.
It's funny because you hear this tip. It's a great tip for anyone, is to ask those around you, especially your manager and your coworkers, what do you think of my work? And so we never had these conversations until the day I was leaving. And the day after I resigned, my boss said to me, pulled me into her office and she said, give me a number. And I said, there's no number I can give you because I don't want to be here. I don't belong. And she said, fine, I understand. And I said, "But it doesn't matter. I'm easy to replace." She said, no, you're actually the most difficult person to replace because you know how to get things done. You That's are awesome. A problem solver. And that's I think it's a great tip for anyone, is to be a problem solver, to be able to work independently, to solve problems, and then your work will always be considered valuable.
Absolutely. And getting results.
Because that's all that matters.
Yeah. So what does your portfolio consist of currently?
Oh, it's all over the place. I have a Toronto property. I live in Burlington and I rent a part of my home. I have properties in St. Catharines. I used to have property in Brantford. I wasn't as successful as you were in Brantford. and primarily I'm acquiring property in Hamilton right now. So I'm a little all over the place.
Yeah. What strategies are you doing?
So I have kind of like an executive rental. I have regular buy and hold. I have a couple student properties. And currently I'm legal suiting properties. So I'm taking out permits to create a legal accessory apartment in three of my basements in Hamilton.
Oh, wow. So a little bit of everything.
And I've done two so far. Yeah. And just like the stock conversation, just going with what works for that market, right?
Absolutely. I know you wrote a few articles about student rentals. Can you give us some pros and cons on some investing in student properties?
It really depends on the market. Like, for example, I have a lot of friends and clients that invest in the McMaster student rental market, and they are killing it. That's the supply in that market is so tight that you basically have your pick of the tenant. So that is a wonderful strategy. And if you know how to screen tenants properly, you can get wonderful, wonderful tenants of young people who are full of life with mommy and daddy's credit card. So they have ample money. It's no joke. We were looking at our property this week near McMaster, and there's Audis parked on the street in the student quote unquote ghetto. Right? I have friends with tenants who drive Porsches. Yeah, it can be wonderful, and then it can be really tough as well. It can be a lot tougher in like college markets. The students aren't there as long. They're not. I don't know what it is. I think they come from different backgrounds. They're less affluent, it seems, than university students. But even still, not all university markets are pleasant either. Like Brantford wasn't easy because it seems to be quite saturated for the Laurier campus in the downtown, and the same with St. Catharines. That market for Brock University students seems to be quite saturated. And when you have saturation, it seems that you don't have your pick of the students. So often you're chasing tenants, as in like you don't have your pick. You're often happy to just get a group, and then you kind of take your chances from there. And also because there is so much supply, it's like the students take it for granted. Even if you give them like a brand new house, they may not treat it well. Mm-hmm. So it really depends on the market.
Are you doing 8 months or 12-month leases?
But yeah, I have a lot of experience in all markets.
Yeah, no, that's good.
I have Brocky rooms, so those are 12-month. Yeah. Yeah. My houses are in A++ areas.
Okay.
So that kind of for 12 months. I get 12-month leases because I am in prime area and my houses are in good condition. And that was both a offensive and defensive strategy. Like in case the market got saturated, I knew I still had the best location. So that was important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so what about your properties that you said you're converting a couple with basements?
Yeah. One I've held for a while. Like I've discussed it before in like other areas I've written. One's my daughter's house. Right. That will be like her
REFT. That is really cool, by the way. Let's talk about that. So why did you decide to buy your kids a house instead of an RESP?
I'm a bit of a worrywart, and I think I'm always thinking about the future. When I had my daughter, about 3 months in, I was concerned about how I was going to pay for her university. She's only 3 months old at the time, so I went and bought her a house.
That's awesome.
Knowing that I needed to earn extra income, because I didn't want to be paying for her university, college, whatever, housing out of my own pocket and delaying my retirement, because my retirement's important to me. And so just a pragmatic solution to my problem. I don't want to retire later. I don't want to pay out of pocket for these things. So I bought an investment where the cash flow and mortgage pay down and all those things will be able to provide her with what she needs when she goes to school financially.
That's great thinking, and not many people consider doing that, but it's much better. I mean, at least at the end, she, worst case scenario, has a place to live, can collect some money, or you've got the equity mm-hmm. that you've built in the house that you can use towards school. I mean, it's a no-brainer.
Last year, I converted into a duplex. So it was a single-family home, originally rented to students. They were a bit rough with the property. And so when basements became legal for apartments, that's when we made the change to move to a more stable tenant profile.
So what are you looking for currently? Do you want another buy and hold? Do you want another student rental? What are you looking for?
Not sure. We have some refis coming up. Not sure. Not sure I want more tenants right now. So I'm kind of like, you know, seeing what comes up. Like I have a lot of friends, and just like you, you know, I network a lot. We both have a lot of friends in real estate. So I'm listening to opportunities. So I'm looking at some to be a joint venture partner for some development stuff. I know someone who's looking for some capital for some flips. I may do that, or I just may buy more buy and holds. So I don't know.
Yeah, keeping your options open.
Yeah, it's good to have options. And the same with my investments. Like they all have options, right? I deliberately bought those houses that had separate side entrances so that I could potentially suite them.
Mm-hmm. So is that what you're helping your clients do as well?
It really depends on the client, what they want. You know, if a client wants a condo for their kid, then that's what they're going to get. Right. And then for our novice investors, we keep it really simple. So for example, like 4 years ago, 5 years ago, actually let's bring it back like 7 years ago. In Hamilton, for example, we were buying multifamily properties, small, right? Because mm-hmm. that was affordable, simple. We're not getting the commercial, because the larger buildings are quite rough back in those days in terms of tenant profile. Yeah, but that was the thing. That was the ideal investment to us, was small multifamily. But then the city started cracking down on them, sending out inspectors and basically shutting, not literally shutting people down, but they're fining landlords for non-conforming property. So we shut that part of the business down, and which is when we made the move to student rentals, because we could get similar cash flow with a student rental, but it was also nice because students can be a better tenant profile mm-hmm. than lower city Hamilton multifamily tenants. Really, it was about just chasing cash flow, and then presenting that those opportunities to our clients. Like whatever we were investing in, we present it to our tenant, our clients, because you know we are their agent. We are their, we have a fiduciary responsibility to them. Like, this is what I'm interested in. This is how I invest. Would you like the same? Because that keeps our business really easy as well. Like, this, I think this is a great investment. You should buy it because I would buy it myself.
Yeah.
And that's all we ever do.
And I think there's a lot of misconception out there that if you work with a realtor that's an investor, they're going to take your deals. But it's actually the other way around.
No, they're actually quite accurate. I've seen a lot of it. I've seen a lot of it. And don't ask me. Go ask contractors. Go ask property managers, because they see it too. It's not how I run our business, right? Mm-hmm. Do unto others as you want done to yourself. Like my daughter's house is a good example. The house that I bought for my daughter, I showed a house across the street from it, the exact same house, but it had a garage. I showed that house probably 6 times, one-on-one showings. I put at least 3 tours through that property. And the agent was like, why aren't you bringing me an offer? I'm like, I don't know. Maybe we just weren't convincing enough. And so when that then someone else bought that property. It was a great property. It had a garage. And I had to go and spend more money on the property I bought for my daughter. But I only bought the house for my daughter because knowing that I couldn't sell it.
Right.
Like, no one else wants it. I'll buy it.
So what is the best deal that you bought?
Pretty happy with everything we've gotten. Mm-hmm. So let's stick with this one. Other than calling it my daughter's house, I often call it the house that nobody wanted. So I paid like $255 for it.
Okay.
The year my daughter was born, so 2014. Mm-hmm. The market has gone up about 25% each year since between then and now, so over 4 years. And now I'm getting about $2,700 in rent for it.
Do you know what your cash flow is on it?
I'm sort of embarrassed and not embarrassed to say I don't know. I'm more concerned about growing than I am looking what's behind.
Right.
Right. My eyes on the next deal versus I know my numbers work. $2,700 plus utilities on a property I paid $255 for. Right. I sunk about $100K into it in renovations. Cash flow's good. Cash flow should be $500-$700, somewhere around there. That's good enough for me.
Right. No, that's awesome.
Yeah. I'm more interested in pursuing the next deal.
So how many deals do you want to buy in 2018? Do you have a goal for that?
No specific goal. Just waiting for our refis, and instead of being cash poor, house rich, we'll have some cash. It'll really be what opportunity presents itself, and that we'll move on it. Probably we'll buy another house, at least one more house, just so we can make it an even 10 properties.
Nice.
In our portfolio. And but like I said, I'm got my eye on some land development opportunities and some other potential joint venture opportunities that require less of my time and attention and just require my capital.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. So in your real estate investing, the years that you've spent, are there any lessons, your top lesson that you can share, or the biggest thing that you've overcame that you want to share with the audience?
Early on, the biggest thing I overcame was really just analysis paralysis.
Right.
I'm a detail, which is funny, because you asked me what my cash flow is. I don't know. But when I started, I lived off the spreadsheet. Like, I've been at my early career jobs were as analysts. You know, I've logged well over 10,000 hours on Microsoft Excel. I can design pretty complicated spreadsheets. Isn't that funny? Like, I tell you that now and I don't know my own cash flow. I couldn't get off the spreadsheet to make a decision, pull the trigger on a property early on. And I didn't know the exact property. I should have bought it, a house on Strathcona, which is a really nice street in Hamilton, legal duplex for like just over $200,000. And I probably could have rented it out for like 2,100 at the time, and that property would be worth like close to triple. I'll never forget that property I missed, and I regret not taking action on it. Taking action is like the biggest thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Taking action. And then I think, you know, when you speak to a lot of different investors, the biggest regrets they have is A, not starting sooner and not buying more. And then sometimes they sell too fast as well. So how did you overcome that? And like, what would you recommend that people do to not have analysis paralysis and take action?
So that was my lesson. And then the best advice I can give people is like, find people that you align with. So here's another investor mistake. And I made the same mistake. I didn't know anybody. Like when I started out, there weren't like networking groups that were all over the place. There wasn't SoReit, there wasn't Rain. Well, Rain existed, I just didn't know about it. Internet wasn't as big back then. But you try to start out on your own and you try to build it up from nothing. Like, you know, I don't know. If you don't know any realtors, like how do you find a realtor? Just ask my friend. Oh, who do you have? Like, oh, I know this person. I don't know if they're any good. And then like how many realtors actually know anything about investing? So that's where you start. And then like, okay, now I need someone to renovate. And then like, who do you know? Nobody, right? So the advice I would give is find people that you align with, like people who are investing the way that you want to invest, and then just copy what they're doing.
So you mentioned networking groups. Where are you networking? And I know you have your own networking group as well. Mm-hmm. Have you been able to get a lot of connections or people as well connected with one another that way?
Well, what real estate networking has done for me is it's allowed me to spend more time with people who are like-minded and who are on the same journey as I am. So I've been like a Rain member of Rain since 2008. So this is my 10-year anniversary, wow. For example. And thanks to Rain, I made some wonderful contacts. That's how I found Rockstar Real Estate, through another Rain member that referred me to them. So I attend a lot of... Actually, no, I joined Rockstar before I actually went to their meetings. and I knew Quentin before the Durham REI started. So then he started it when it was tiny, tiny. There was a very tiny Hamilton group that we used to meet at a bar, and that was like the worst idea because the networking doesn't improve after like pint after pint of,
no,
you know. And then we didn't improve much when we went to Tim Hortons, and we were still tiny. And that was kind of like the motivation that I started my own. Like I started my own specific group specific to Hamilton, because the group that we had, it lacked leadership and not everyone always attended. And then selfishly, I wasn't getting much benefit from it because I was like the most senior person there. So then I started my own group and committed to keep it going. And it's been going, it's changed names.
Yeah, I was going to say
it's really bigger now.
Rebranded, and you've got a lot, and it's a new location as well. Do you want to let people know where to find you and what your group is?
Yeah, for now it's called Halton REI. .ca is where you can find it. Currently we're meeting at Sheridan College in the conference center. So you'll have to register before you'll get the map. Otherwise you will never find us. We're actually undergoing another name change, so I don't know if it'll remain the Halton REI.
And, we should go through some of these names and have people reply with some votes. What were you thinking for names? They're funny.
I was born in 79, so you'll understand that some of the names are from like 80s or 80s themed TV shows and movies. So we had some of the keywords that we were trying to build our names around were like Maverick, Top Gun, Transformers, a lot of Star Wars references, like Rogue, ultra nerdy stuff. And we've settled on Titans.
Oh, you have?
Okay. Which is to pay homage to one of my favorite authors and a mentor of mine is Tim Ferriss. Who wrote a book called Tools of the Titans. And Titans is also has a nerdy connotation because there is a group called in the DC universe called the Teen Titans. And the leader of the Teen Titans is Robin. And, you know, the boy wonder, you know, Batman and Robin. And I named my daughter after Robin.
I didn't know that.
So yeah, we're the new name, the new umbrella name for our business is Titan Realty Investment Group, but we haven't really rolled that out yet. So this is like the first time I'm publicly talking about it.
Oh, wow. Look at that. And so why the change now?
Well, it's just because we have so many brands. Like when I started by myself, it was just Mr. Hamilton because I was by myself. Mm-hmm. And then I got busy. Then it grew and it grew and it grew and it grew. And then Hamilton was too small for us in terms of being able to find properties that cash flow. For example, we started off in Burlington because it was still affordable back then. When Burlington got expensive, we went to Waterdown. When Waterdown got expensive, we went to Hamilton proper. Mm-hmm. So we're not married to a neighborhood or city. We are married to cash flow. And I own property in St. Catharines too. And to go back to what we were discussing earlier, again, about ethics, I deliberately was buying in St. Catharines because I wasn't representing any of my clients in St. Catharines. I wouldn't compete. I'm not going to compete directly with my clients. So I actually left town to go buy property. We actually kind of regretted it because Hamilton was just flying and taking off while St. Catharines hadn't caught up yet. So, you know, but for about a year, we're like, damn, we bought St. Catharines, should just bought Hamilton until St. Catharines finally caught up. And then even, especially in 2017, when Hamilton was just crazy, we did actually over half of our business was in St. Catharines and Niagara region, which is why we had to move away from the Mr. Hamilton brand. You know, I also have the URL investinstcatharines.ca where we have lots of free reports and stuff like that. Lots of reports specific to investors, like on transportation, on like the student population, stuff like that. We were already doing a lot of Hamilton, a lot of Niagara region without a better name. We just called it Halton REI. Because that's where we met, and that's where the majority of our clients came from, was from the Halton region.
So I guess I won't be seeing you in your jersey anymore.
Still be wearing the jersey because it's, you know, I think Rain's going to name it number one for top investment town. So you better believe I'll be wearing the Hamilton jersey at Acre.
Right, yeah. Do you go to Acre every year?
This will be my 12th Acre, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, it used to be called something else before that. I was told I have to pay like $5 into the jar if I call it the old name, so I won't name the old name. But I did the first time we did, I did the take-home program, which was given to me by my ex-wife's father. And then the following, the next time it was in Toronto, I did that back in 2008. So 2018 will be my 11th Acre in person, really my 12th though.
Wow, that's great. And I think you have a discount code. Do you want to share it?
Yeah, happy to share it. And I get nothing for it. For anyone who uses it, you get, I think you get $300 off the retail price. I think it's $687 plus tax, which is already crazy cheap for a full weekend with my discount code of Irwin's Guest, E-R-W-I-N-S Guest. Just enter that into the coupon code field. Save $300 and then it gets even cheaper.
Yeah.
That's a ridiculous price for a full weekend.
I think it was like 400 and change. I actually just put your code through this weekend and bought it.
Awesome.
So thank you. Yeah. I don't know if I can share that with everyone, but I'm sure it's appreciated. So thank you for that.
Like to me, it's the best weekend of crash course real estate. Like if you know nothing, you will know more than like 80% of people out there after this weekend.
Yeah.
You'll understand how to treat this as a strategy. Like this is a repeatable system, which is why I prefer investing in real estate over like anything else. Cause I can't repeat anything else. I can't repeat stock success, right?
No.
I can repeat my success with each property.
Yeah, that's true. And the networking and meeting like-minded individuals and getting to see your friends that you haven't seen for a few months, you know, they're investors.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Like for people who want to get ahead in life, you don't find those people everywhere you go versus a room like at Acre. There's a lot of people there who want to get ahead in life. Mm-hmm. And it's just more fun to have those conversations. I was at a mastermind today. We were all talking in real estate jargon. And I paused and I said, how cool is it that we can have these conversations and understand each other? Because where else can you go in this? And you can do this.
Yeah.
Not many places.
No.
Not many places. And you'll get to meet people at places like Rain and Acre. And for myself, those relationships have stayed with me over the years. And many of them I count among my best friends.
Awesome. So I just want to go back to your real estate meetup group. How do you pick the topics that you're going to talk about and your guests?
I just, through my networking, I just know interesting people. For example, my friend and client, Ryan, and it's just, part of it's just having a lot of clients. So one of my clients, Ryan Highmarsh, he's a certified coach at a company called LMI. He's going to do a presentation on goal setting and keeping yourself accountable, how to keep accountable to your goals. And he's going to talk to his own experience. So he went through his portfolio that we helped him build. So price less mortgage, he said he'd be left with over $2 million. Hmm. So his subject will be, his presentation is titled How My Net Worth Grew $2 million with One Written Goal.
So when is that meeting?
I think Brian's speaking in March.
Okay, good.
My February speaker is my friend John Romanis, who's a really bright guy. He has a CPA, he has his MBA. He used to work for one of the major beverage companies. He typically manages 30 to 50 people. He teaches as well, just for fun, at Sheridan at I forget a different college as well. He teaches business just for fun and kicks. He doesn't need the money. And his presentation is $700,000 in 7 years as a part-time investor. Because that's honest to goodness what he did, just buying one property a year.
Yeah, it's amazing to hear those inspiration stories. And it's not that common. I mean, it seems like a lot when you're looking back at it. But I'm sure that whoever it is, if they put their mind to it and take action over time, anyone can mm-hmm. create that luck for themselves.
Mm-hmm. So I have a question for you. Have you spent any of the money that you've made on anything nice for yourself or your boyfriend?
So yes, actually, we took Matt's parents away on their first trip ever to Jamaica. So the four of us went and we did that.
What did they think about that?
Oh, they loved it. We went to Secrets Adults Only, all-inclusive 5-star resort. Did some day trips and it was awesome. I mean, his dad helps us a lot with the renos on the properties and the handyman stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was nice to give them something that they wouldn't be able to afford on their own. So and obviously we had fun as well. It was a vacation for us too, but mm-hmm. it's probably the biggest thing I've spent in terms of stuff for my own. Otherwise I actually like to keep the property stuff separate than my personal expenses and work mm-hmm. paychecks. So I think that mm-hmm. I just try to invest as much as I can back into the business to keep it growing.
Right. Yeah, you're still young. I talked to another young investor yesterday who's just like you, just crazy frugal. All the money goes back in. But I want especially new investors to understand it's not about the making money, it's about what the money does.
Yeah.
It's about the income, but then what do you do with it?
And the freedom and the time. Absolutely agreed 100%.
So I joke, but I'm actually serious with people. Again, as a someone who thinks ahead, unfortunately, I had kids pretty late. I had my daughter when I was 36. So I'm pretty much guaranteed to be an old grandfather. So having real estate for your kids, my daughter will definitely have a house when she needs one. We can sell her property. She actually has two properties. So she will have a roof. She will have financial security in terms of if she wants to be mortgage free, she can be mortgage free when she's out of university. And what I believe is if you're financially secure, you're more likely to start your family earlier. Because I know plenty of people who are 30 and they're worried about money and having a kid's completely not even in their mindset. Because they're worried about money versus I want to be a grandfather sooner than later. So no pressure on my kids. But this is how I'm doing something about it.
Yeah. How old's your, so your daughter is 3 or 4 and your son is 6 months or something, right? Or am I off?
Bruce is now 2.5, my son. Yeah, my daughter Robin is, she just turned 4.
Big Robin. So
this is me thinking ahead.
That is good. It's good to plan ahead.
Because you get it. You have lots of friends your own age.
Yeah.
How are they buying homes? Are they buying homes?
Most of them aren't. They're renting and just saving slowly. So I'm trying to push them. Now the friends that I have from real estate investing definitely are in a different game, but the friends I've had for a while prior to investing, they're, you know, maybe buying their first property or still renting and just saving up to buy their first property. But you know, it's you gotta take action and know what you want and go for it.
I just flipped through this article. Royal LePage was predicting even though some people are saying the Toronto market will be like level, Royal LePage is predicting just 5% appreciation. So let's take a $1.3 million house, because I deal in houses, right? I like freehold. I like land. I don't do condo. Let's take a $1.3 million house. If it goes up 5%, I'm typing into my spreadsheet. I actually know how to use these things. So 5% means $65,000 it goes up in price. Right. How many people can save $65,000?
Yeah, exactly. It's just, and 1.5 million, I mean, you can get something for less, hopefully.
If you can
look a little outside of the main city, but
I was lucky enough to always grow up in houses, so I was thinking houses. So yeah, okay, so yeah, you can buy a condo. Hey, you live in Oakville. What's a detached house go for in Oakville?
Like 900-ish, but you could probably get a semi that doesn't have any condo fees or something like that for seven.
Seven? Okay. Say it's seven. 700,000 goes up 5%. That's $35,000. How many people can save $35,000 after tax in a year? Even a married couple.
No, I know. It's insane. You can save and save and save your pennies, but just buying a house and just waiting helps so much more. I mean, you know, I went from having nothing to a lot more in a matter of 5 years.
Yeah.
And I would have never saved that with any, you know, even double my income, I wouldn't have been able to save that.
That's good advice, I think, for any investor. Even, sorry, anyone who doesn't own a home, anyone who's renting, you gotta start somewhere.
Yeah.
Buy a home.
Even if it's a little home, at least it's something. So how do you balance it all? You know, the real estate, investing, your realtor job, your family guy with kids and wife. How do you do it all?
So to give some context, I train 4 or 5 times a week, split between CrossFit and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So yes, that is time consuming because that's what I do for fun. That's my play time. And how I do it, you know, I couldn't do all this without my nanny. I'm just not wired to, like, as much as I love my kids, like, I love my kids like crazy, right? I go out there and, like, being a landlord is not always fun. I go out in there and suffer on their behalf so that they can have brighter futures, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm not someone that can spend 10 hours, 12 hours, 16 hours with my kids every day. I do have a nanny. My wife works full time as well. She has her own businesses.
Your wife is Carrie Chan.
I have a nanny.
An amazing accountant, and she's an investor. I mean, I'm going to plug because you probably won't, but she is awesome. And I would suggest that if you're looking for an awesome accountant, to reach out to Cherry.
Yeah, it's what's her website? Real Estate Tax Tips.
Right.
.ca. Thanks for the plug.
She has a good blog as well. She sends me a weekly blog, which is quite interesting. I read it.
It's funny because I blog too. And when people see me in public, they're often like, your wife has such a great blog. Well, thanks. And I jokingly say, I'm Mr. Cherry Chan, I'm not Mr. Hamilton. Yeah, she's a much wider readership than I do because her topic is much more broad than mine.
Right.
I'm in just a few cities versus, you know, her topic is national. Tax is pretty consistent. It's pretty applicable to across Canada.
Right. So the nanny piece definitely helps. Anything else that you're doing?
Just trying to be as productive as possible in my work. And that's another thing investors need to do. Like, I don't do much in terms of like grunt work. I don't know if that's the right way to say it. For example, I don't even mow my own lawn, let alone mow like my properties or shovel snow at my properties. I outsource everything. I don't swing a hammer. My ex actually owned a renovation company, so I know a lot about renovations. I've done a lot of renovations myself. So I know how to look at them and I know an idea how to price them. So that's helped me along the way. Where was I going? But yeah, because I know what I'm doing, but I don't spend my time there. I try to spend my time on the most productive, most expensive work possible. And that way I don't waste any time. Because wasting time means time I can't spend with my family.
Yeah, I love outsourcing, even just cleaning, somebody to clean your house. I started outsourcing my meals. So, you know, those like meals that you
cool.
eat in your house and then they come in, this one comes in jars. You literally just put in the microwave for 2 minutes and it's all like fresh food. It's really good.
What's that called? Can I look it up? What's it called?
Yeah, it's called City Fresh or Fresh City, one of them. But it is pretty cool. And they deliver to Burlington and Oakville. So it's and then you do breakfast. They also have the meals that you can actually cook. But if you have half an hour to do that, you can. I outsource even my paper organization. I'm really bad with organizing papers. So I outsource that. But yeah, I mean, pick and choose where your most valuable time is and outsource the rest. And I kind of have a rule of thumb of if it's going to cost me less than, you know, $40 an hour, I'm just going to source it out.
What I also find is that like the best leaders, they do the job that no one else can do. So that's like my role in my businesses. I do the role that nobody else can do. So for example, I'm doing all the marketing for my businesses because that's a strength of mine. I don't ever thought of it as a strength of mine. It's just I made it become a strength of mine. Like I used to be, like I said, like I used to be an analyst for many years. I actually have, my personality type is quite analytical, but I know it's not very productive. So I'll break it out when I need it. But otherwise, you know, leadership is a much more useful skill set. So that's a lot more often what I express.
Just curious.
So I have a full-time assistant as well. Not many people have that.
Right.
So people who work with me know I have a full-time assistant. And that helps me be more productive.
How many people on your team now?
We have, other than myself, we have six other agents on my team. Three of them are rather new, and three are pretty veteran. So yeah, we're growing.
Yeah, that's awesome. For new investors, people looking to get in the market, what advice would you give them?
For anyone who's listened to my podcast, and again, I was at a mastermind today where I'm like one of the smaller fish, if not the smallest fish in terms of portfolio. Everyone I know who's ultra successful and made like multiple millions of dollars in real estate, they're all still investing. They're actually like happy the way the market is because the consumer is on the sidelines not knowing what to do. Whereas the professionals know how to read stats. They understand because they're such strong investors, like the OSFI rules don't affect them. They know how to cash flow. They know how to renovate. They know how to pick property. They're not slowing down. Like I'm still buying.
Yeah, me too.
You're still buying.
Yeah. And I've gotten ready, like even, you know, in December and prior and refinance to have, you know, money ready for if things do take a little bit of a dip to be able to say, okay, you know, here's my buying opportunity, you know, even more emphasized.
And I read news articles like almost every day. And I don't like pigeonhole myself either. I try to read all angles. So like that guy that said that the market's going to crash 40%, like, okay, I want to read that. And I want to understand what your viewpoint is to see if it makes sense. Right. Mm-hmm. And then that guy said that the market was going to crash 20% like 10 years ago. So he's doubling down because he's very, very wrong. Like, no, seriously. So if you were doubly wrong over like a 10-year span, usually you lose your job.
Yeah.
So then I read.
Forget so fast the articles from last year, which are repeating themselves year over year.
Yeah. No, I was teasing Don Campbell on Facebook. I took a break from my Facebook cleanse. He wrote a post in 2011 about when the amortization changed from 40-year to 35-year. All his points, like 1 through 11 or 1 through 7, it's all the same thing again. And again, like you said, people forget. People forget. People are just short-term minded. Like we've had at least six similar size mortgage rule changes as these new OFC rules that came in effect January 1st in the last 7-10 years. And each time the market responded almost similarly, where things went kind of crazy up until that point, and then things just died off.
Right.
But then the market continued up afterwards.
Right. Yeah.
Like the foreign buyer tax that slowed Vancouver down maybe 6 months, and the same thing happened in Toronto. It slowed down Toronto for maybe 6 months.
Yeah, in 10 years. And
things just went back up.
Yeah, and in 10 years from now, you won't even remember this. And in 10 years from now, my guess is you'll be ahead of where you are today. And your properties mm-hmm. will be increased in value. And paralysis analysis is one of those things that if people can get over it and pull the trigger, they're going to mm-hmm. be thankful in 10 years from now. Even if this year it's not as good as 2 years from now or 3 years from now or whatever it is, mm-hmm. at least they're in the market.
At least in the market. And no one can call the bottom.
No.
Because if you remember like 2007, 2008, the Toronto real estate market dipped, I think, for like 2 or 3 months. And that was it. And that was 2007, 2008. The credit crisis was Canada's worst recession since the Great Depression. Prices went down for 3 months. Like I don't even know if it was 5%. And I think everyone knows where prices have gone in the GTA and Hamilton and Brantford and St. Catharines since 2007, 2008. Because even if you bought at the peak of 2007, I think you did okay.
Yeah, absolutely. If you buy on the fundamentals, I mean, look at the immigration and how many people come into Canada. I mean, they all need a place to live. So where are they going to go? And it's supply and demand.
And with the Trudeau government, and I'm not saying right or wrong, because I don't have an opinion on this. These decisions are way above my pay grade. Like I've read discussions on how the government may increase immigration to Canada to like 400,000 under the last PC government. I think we ranged between like 230, 260 on the high side, 260,000 on the high side. Now we're talking about 400,000. And historically, about 36% of those immigrants end up in Ontario in the Golden Horseshoe.
Right. And then what's around there, right, is all that land that nobody can build on.
Exactly. So I was actually discussing with people last night, you know, we may have already hit bottom. What if this is the bottom? Because for Hamilton context, we're down about 15% from April. Like we're having this conversation at the end of January. From April to December, April to December, we're down about 15% in Hamilton. What if this is the bottom?
Mm-hmm.
Because like you were discussing, the demand economics are just, there's just too much. You know, Amazon picked Toronto as the only city only Canadian city in the top 20. Toronto is reporting record tourism. Canada just won in another survey. We didn't win. We came second in the world for best country to live in after Switzerland.
Right.
All these signs are pointing towards like people wanting to be here.
Yeah. And all the employers and the jobs and the opportunities, the lack of land, all of the development with the transportation improvements. I mean, there's a lot being mm-hmm. done. All the post-secondary education that's in the area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of things to factor in. And if we were in a different part of Canada, I may not be as, you know, excited about it, perhaps. But I think in Ontario, and especially in the Golden Horseshoe, you can't really go wrong.
I think especially if they traveled more, like travel to places that are like high... Travel to places where people are where we're getting lots of immigrants from, like China, for example. Like I had a friend who just got back from China. He was in Shanghai specifically. He was in the suburbs, and he was telling me afterwards. He's telling me now I understand why Chinese people push each other. They push people everywhere because if you didn't push people, you wouldn't get anywhere. And his context was, it was basically shoulder to shoulder in the suburbs of Shanghai. Could you imagine suburban Oakville? And you're shoulder to shoulder everywhere.
Sounds crazy.
And he said like the sun was like a fireball in the sky because the air was so polluted.
Wow.
And it was almost impossible to get fresh produce in the restaurants. Like, the food isn't there and the education system isn't there. We're very lucky. And that's why we see so many foreign students coming to Canada, because often they don't even have opportunity to go to university, versus we have very big universities here, very big colleges, who are happy to accept foreign dollars.
Yeah, absolutely. So just for time purposes, let's move on to our other section, which is called the lightning round. So it's basically a series of five questions, and then you would answer them very quickly. You can expand a little bit, but within under a minute. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Favorite real estate investing book ever?
That's a tough one. I'd have to say Real Estate Investing in Canada by Don Campbell.
It's a good one. What about your favorite podcast?
It's actually not real estate related. It'd be the Tim Ferriss Show.
Awesome. And by the way, guys, Erwin also has his own podcast. What's it called?
The Truth About Real Estate Investing for Canadians.
And it's awesome. What about your favorite pastime? So what do you do for fun when you're not doing real estate? I think you covered a little bit of the jujitsu, but maybe there's others.
Yeah. Jujitsu, I do CrossFit, and just spending time with my kids and family, and my wife too.
Yeah, don't forget her. So if you lost all your money, all your assets tomorrow, how would you start again?
I'd be trying to raise money. I start over again with no different how I started, trying to build digital assets like MrHamilton.ca. If anyone wants an idea what a digital asset looks like, or my podcast, The Truth About Real Estate Investing, start over again, build a digital asset.
And if someone has $50,000 and they come to you and they ask you how they should spend it, what would you suggest?
If it's their first time buying a home, I say buy a home. Buy a home, preferably that you can rent out parts of it for Airbnb or legal suite, either or. Yeah, even if you have to buy a condo, if that's only down payment for a condo, then get a 2-bedroom so that you can rent out one of the bedrooms.
Okay, great advice. Where can listeners find you if they wanted to reach out to you to learn more about you?
I have so many places. Google my name is probably easy. If that'll give you a sampling of what I'm up to. Or check out my podcast. You know, I've got 45 episodes, including the lovely Sarah Larby, on all sorts of ranging topics. And just to mention, the name of the show is Truth About Real Estate Investing, because this industry is full of sharks. And I'm really sad to say that, but there's many smarter people than me that have been in this industry longer than I have that would completely agree. And that's why I come from a place of integrity, and integrity comes from telling the truth. And that's why I have a show called The Truth About Real Estate Investing. And the URL is truthaboutrealestateinvesting.ca, which is a new and noteworthy podcast on iTunes as well.
I always wondered how you came up with that title.
Thanks. You know, just, you know, in advice for anyone who's raising money or getting the real estate, you know, come from a place of integrity and you will do well, because people sell bullshit. Bullshitters don't realize, but people can smell bullshit. So don't be one of those guys.
Agreed.
It's a very small industry. Like everybody knows everybody.
Yeah.
So you do something wrong, everyone's going to find out about it.
That's true. You start going to enough networking events and you run into the same people, which is awesome, by the way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, ethics and integrity for sure. Perfect. So on that note, Erwin, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast, Where Should I Invest? Thanks very much.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Sarah. Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to Where Should I Invest with your host, Sarah Larby. Make sure to listen in next time. We'll catch you on the next episode of Where Should I Invest?